Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 90. My name is John. And in the naked light, I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. This is the easy part, isn't it? It's easy to quietly observe, consider, process, and methodically produce a measured commentary on the events of Charlottesville, Virginia. As you may have gleaned if you've listened long enough, I come from a family of hotheads. I have spent my adult life battling to control the urges to lash out, so much so that when we first started dating, Gina often accused me of being emotionless. Yes, raging is in the title of the podcast, so it may seem like I'm trying to become a member of the Red Lantern Corps. But I have mellowed a bit over the past few years with the help of the release valve that is this podcast. Nevertheless, I know that monster of the id is waiting to break out. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you'll recall the podcast about Ray Rice, where Gina and I discussed our histories of abuse, her from her previous marriage, and me from my childhood. I told you about the physical abuse, but there was also some mental abuse. I still have the voices in my head taunting me. I have a tendency to be defensive, and that's something that Gina has had to work with to understand about me. So, I get it. I understand when people want to not just defend themselves, but retaliate against anger and hatred directed at them. I get it when you see a person or a group spouting a repugnant ideology that you don't want to give them the luxury of calmed, reasoned debate. You just want to shout back at them. Silence them. I mean, how could anyone in this day and age hold to such vile idiocy? Surely these fools deserve to be beaten down, figuratively and literally. Clearly they have given up their right to receive any reaction other than swift, fierce, and definitive retribution for their thoughts and actions. I get it. It is not easy to choose a different path when someone stands before you spouting hatred. I'm lucky. I've made this outlet for myself. The whole reason this podcast exists is for me to have a creative way to channel that negative energy and sort out my thoughts so I don't lash out at the idiocy. But times like these make it, so difficult. And not always for the reasons you might think. In this day and age, you would think I wouldn't have to cut into my running time to state something so obvious. But over the past couple of weeks, I'm afraid to not say it. I wholeheartedly reject everything about Nazi ideology. It's disgusting promotion of hatred, it's anti-Semitism, racism, homophobia, and even more that I will get into later. There is nothing about Nazism that I agree with. Have I gotten that out of the way? Have I made it clear enough? As we can see by the recent events in our nation, its hateful message is still alive out there. The worst part about it is it has inspired others to retaliate in hate. When I was a kid, I remember the mantra, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." Throughout my life, I've heard from people, predominantly on the political left, that violence is not the answer, and that we should give peace a chance. Do these not apply when someone is expressing an opinion contrary to your beliefs, however disgusting it may be? Do you get to pick and choose when to be peaceful in the face of adversity? If someone tells you that they hate you, do you threaten to punch them? Or do you give peace a chance? The libertarian philosophy is that of defense. In other words, you do not have the right to initiate violence against another person, group, or nation. If you are physically attacked, you certainly have the right to defend yourself and subdue your attacker to whatever degree you feel you need to properly save yourself from harm or death. But again, the key is physically attacked. Words, thoughts, and expressions, no matter how horrendous, are still covered under natural rights and the Constitution. This has been brewing for a long time. The drive to remove Confederate monuments has been going on for a couple of years. Everyone knew the hate mongers would be there to try to salvage their precious little monument and park. You saw the names of the groups who were coming to protest. You knew what to expect. The counter-protesters, for the most part, tried to keep it peaceful and civil, at first. But before the protesting turned deadly, some of the counter-protesters had deteriorated to calling for violence and death towards the Nazis. Unfortunately, it didn't end with just words of anger, but in death, when a man plowed his car into a group of counter-protesters. He has deprived a woman of her life, her natural right to live. Unequivocally, he deserves punishment. I have a difficult time trying not to entertain the pleasurable thoughts of beating the little fucker to death myself. I never said controlling my darker emotions was easy. It's chilling to know that can happen in this country. It's sickening. It's inexcusable. The reaction from the self-righteous left has been less frightening, but just as draconian. The successful push to destroy pro-Confederate statues and monuments on the facade seems reasonable from the way they present their argument. And just so you understand where I'm coming from in all this, I personally don't give a shit. Monuments mean nothing to me. I took a walk around the National Mall in D.C. a few years ago, and while the monuments were cool-looking, so what? To me, monuments and memorials are nothing more than interesting architecture or artwork, photo opportunities, and occasionally a history lesson. I suppose I'm the oddball here, because inexplicably to me, so many others make such a huge deal about them. And when it comes to Confederate monuments and memorials, those who want them torn down feel they have righteous motives on their side. What do they tell us the reasons are? It glorifies the time of slavery. It's a relic of a time that is best forgotten. It's offensive to people. Those are the same arguments used to justify banning or burning the adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Yes, I'm saying tearing down monuments and memorials is the new book burning. I don't give a shit about the monuments, but I damn sure care about the right to free speech and expression, even speech and expression I categorically oppose. You want to wipe out monuments to the Civil War because they offend you? Here's an idea. Don't go to them. Don't look at them. You don't like that it's on public ground? Well, now you understand why government should not be involved in those things. I'm fine with moving the monuments and putting them someplace where they can be used as a lesson of the darker days of the nation. And so people can understand that there are trailblazers who fought to rid the nation of slavery. But to wipe it out completely? That smacks more of censorship than morality. Or maybe there's more to it. It's almost like they don't want a crisis to go to waste. Out of sight, out of mind. If you don't see the statues, you don't think about the history. And if you've delved into the history, which so few people do these days, then you'd also find it was the Democratic Party largely responsible for maintaining slavery before and during the Civil War. And the Democratic Party who founded the KKK in an effort to rally the South and sabotage post-war healing. I mean, how many times have you heard that you shouldn't listen to anything the founding fathers of the United States have to say because of their ties to racism? I was once even told that George W. Bush must be a racist because his grandfather was a racist. So what do you do, then, about a political party that embraced and supported slavery? Could the motivation still be there? Oh, but things have changed. See, back when the Democrats overtly fought for slavery, if you were a slave, you worked the plantation. If you tried to escape, you were beaten or killed. But if you obeyed, if you did what you were told, well, then you got favoritism. Maybe, if you were really good, you got a position inside the House. Try being a minority and oppose the Democrats today. You will be verbally castigated and treated as a leper. But if you vote for the Democrats, they favor you with bread and circus. It's the same war, just a different battlefield. A prison of the mind instead of the body. Control of the heart and soul. And instead of physical abuse, they direct mental and verbal abuse toward those who choose a different path other than that which is set before them by the leftist collectivists. Don't believe me? Wait until I tell you about Daryl Davis later in this podcast. You know what's really been grinding my gears lately? The melodramatics of both sides of the political aisle. The Supreme Court allows gay marriage, and the conservative movement acts like it's the end of civilization. Donald Trump becomes president, and everybody in the liberal movement acts like it's the end of the world. What it boils down to is, you're just pissed because your side didn't win, or because people are getting to do something that you object to morally. So you put on an act of cataclysm. The sky is falling! But only if it's your morality on the losing end. See, if the natural rights of people you don't like are being destroyed, you don't give a fuck. The horrible events of Charlottesville are on everybody's mind. The sickening sight of neo-Nazis should rightfully dishearten any liberty-minded person. Here's the thing most people don't understand. They see the sickening sight of swastikas, hear about the concentration camps and other Aryan atrocities, and they react correctly to the racism and hatred. Folks, that's just Nazi 101. That's just the basics. There's more, much more to Nazism than that. There's a deeper meaning to Nazism that isn't taught, that people are oblivious to. And once you understand the depth of what Nazism is all about, you may question whether or not the Allied forces won World War II. Huddle in close, folks. This is the real American horror story. When you truly understand all of what Nazism is, it throws the whole facade of the right versus left narrative out the window and puts so-called American values into question. Disturbingly, a case could be made that it actually affords more freedom to people than the currently in vogue socialism. Hitler was overtly critical of both the left and right wing in Germany prior to his ascendancy to power. Let me start with the not so obvious. Hitler in specific and Nazis in general had come to abhor capitalism. Remember that later. Despite this disdain for capitalism, there were factions of the Nazi Party who wanted to maintain control of the material wealth, despite other factions wanting to go full-on socialist. So a compromise was drawn to where private property and private business was allowed, but only if it adhered to the Nazi Party platform. So what was the platform? Well, there was the desire to reclaim lands they felt belonged to them because they wanted room to ease their overpopulation. They wanted to provide necessary resources for their citizens' well-being, such as road construction, affordable automobiles, and civil defense. They also set up a national labor board, government-sponsored health care, and farm subsidies. However, farms, like any business under the Nazi government, had to conform to the ideology and decisions of the government. You had to farm what they considered necessary for the country. If your business was not considered productive, then it was not allowed to continue. You could own property under certain government conditions, but again, if its use wasn't considered productive, it was taken by the government. Public services were often privatized, but, maybe you're noticing a pattern here, the government still dictated how the service was run. Nazism believed the needs of the individual should be sacrificed for the needs of the collective. Hitler stated, "Every activity and every need of every individual will be regulated by the collectivity represented by the party, and that there are no longer any free realms in which the individual belongs to himself." Hence, a stronger police force was created to make sure everyone was conforming to the rulings of the collective. The state police had a particular hardline faction specializing in infiltrating and squashing opposition, called the Geheime Stadtpolizei, or colloquially, Gestapo. Yeah, that's where the word Gestapo comes from. It's a shortened version of the German phrase for secret state police. Come to think of it, Nazi is also a contraction. Nazi is the contracted form of the phrase Nationalsozialistische. Translated in English, that means National Socialist. It is often said that socialism is one step away from communism. If that's true, then National Socialism would be one more step from there. As you can see, it incorporates many of the principles of socialism in its political philosophy. But there's one more interesting tidbit of information. Why did Hitler hate the Jews so much? Well, I said at the beginning that he hated capitalists. He blamed the Jews for Germany's economic problems because to him, they were the rich capitalists. This would make for an interesting social experiment. If you could, ask all Americans if they think government should have some control over how a private business owner should run his or her business. Maybe they have a little hesitancy or caveats at first, but tell them that government will force companies to conduct business with people society favors, or prevent companies from doing business with people society doesn't like. Tell them that government would get involved to make sure goods and services are provided to the public at what they consider to be a fair price. Then throw in the anti-capitalist ideology, a national labor board, government-run healthcare, farm subsidies, concerns about overpopulation, and the allocation of resources. And you'll be looking at 70 million people agreeing with you, at least. And all of these things, politically speaking, are Nazi ideals, part of the Nazi Party platform. The powers that be have been trying for over a century now to get citizens of the United States of America to stop trying to be different from the rest of the world and embrace collectivist ideals like socialism. They've nearly achieved their goals, but there are still too many independent-minded people for it to fully take. Yet. But National Socialism, well, that's like socialism light. It's socialism, but with just enough illusion of individuality to make people think they still have some freedom. It should come as no surprise that Americans, who have never been taught properly what Nazism is, thanks to collectivist control of education, would embrace the same political ideals of such a despised group. Nazism is truly a dangerous, perverted, and sick ideology. People know it for its racism and hatred, but even if you take that aspect and leave only the socio-political aspects, it's still horrible. The sad thing is, those socio-political aspects are embraced by people in general and by the majority of American society. It is the political equivalent of a gateway drug. It is anti-liberty and anti-individuality, and it leads to even more severe collectivist control. If there was ever a cancerous idea, that's it. The sad part is the collectivists of today easily and effectively repackage a lot of the propaganda the Nazis used 80 years ago. You don't want government to force you to pay somebody else's health care? You must be a hateful person. You don't want government to dictate what a private business can choose to charge for goods and services? You must be an evil capitalist. You think you should be allowed to keep what you rightfully earn? You must not care about the well-being of society. Once you conform to their indoctrination, give in to their spin, it begins a series of moves to gently and subtly introduce seemingly reasonable concepts that will take people's hearts down insidious paths. You overeaters, you smokers, you people who live unhealthy lives, if your physical body is not meeting society's expectations, then you're a drain on its resources. Take a walk down the path towards physical ideals, the Übermensch, and relegate the rabble to second-class status or worse, all because you collectivists think you have the right to tell others how to live their lives. Our society is awful. Do you know why? Well, back in Nazi Germany, it was blamed on the Jews. These days, it's more generic. It's because of those rich people. It's because of that race of people. Class envy and race baiting. And they're coming from liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats, the far right and the far left. Those are the favorites these days, are they not? Those seem to work best to prey on the small-minded. Frankly, I'm done with it. I'm always going to support your right to free speech. But I am begging you Southerners to seriously rethink the heritage not hate mantra. It's at best counterproductive, and at worst, it's tantamount to agreeing with the racist policies of the past. It's disgusting. If you believe in that, you need to get out of your tiny little world and rethink life. The past is something you learn from, not something you live by. And the same piece of advice goes to those who cling to the notion that slavery in their ancestry holds them back today. My ancestry does not define who I am. Just because there is a slave owner in previous generations in my family, that does not mean there is any slave owner in me. You may buy into the grotesque notion that dead bodies of the past define who you are. But I refuse to allow such propaganda to shackle me. You claim to have the right to use force to take the property and labor of others, and you have the audacity to say I am privileged because of my skin color? You understand irony about as well as an Alanis Morissette song. You want to know what the sad truth is? Nearly every human being on the planet will find slaves in their ancestry. And nearly every human being on the planet will find slave owners in their ancestry. If you look beyond the focus that favors your ideology, you'll see human history rife with atrocities. You could learn from the horrors of the past to build a better future, but sadly, too many these days choose to use the horrors of the past as an excuse to pillage and sabotage what some of us are trying to achieve. Speaking of sick ironies, the same side that has been telling us to make love, not war, except when their side controls the executive branch of government, is showing what they're really about. The overcoming peace with love talk is just that. They want to foment violence and hatred, and it is shown by their words and their actions. Hate-mongering dominates social media, and now we have this group that calls themselves anti-fascists. Militant bands reappearing. See, they're the ones that destroyed property in Berkeley last year to protest a right-wing speaker on campus. Now, they're encouraging initiating violence against their opposition. They want to use force and violence against an ideology known historically for force and violence. Fight discrimination with discrimination, and you replace discrimination with discrimination. Fight hatred with hatred, and you replace hatred with hatred. Fight fascism with fascism, and you replace fascism with fascism. No. Fighting back, yelling back, punching back, shooting back. It's not going to work. It's not going to achieve peace. It's going to exacerbate conflict and hatred and war. You're just making it worse. But I think you know that. There is a better way. Let's learn by example. There's a gentleman named Daryl Davis who has made it his life's work to sit down with members of the KKK. He does not try to change their mind about race. He simply sits with them, talks with them, eats with them. And eventually, the racists change their own minds. Oh yes, and Daryl Davis is black. The way he puts it, how can you hate me if you don't even know me? Once they get to know him and befriend him, they realize all on their own that their stance on racism is wrong. Daryl Davis also collects clan robes. So when these clansmen change their ways, they give him their robes. Daryl Davis has collected hundreds of them. Yet, he is castigated for his tactics. Even other African Americans have called him an Uncle Tom and an Oreo. Daryl Davis has hundreds of robes as proof of his success. Hundreds of men have turned from their hateful ways because of one man's example of love. Those men who change will pass that on to their children, their families, and their friends. Daryl Davis has done more to build a better future than any counter-protest, and certainly more than any so-called anti-fascist protest that actually promotes violence and murder. I may have abandoned religion some time ago, but there is still power behind some of the ideals. For instance, Christ's quote, "Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you." Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend." Gandhi said, "Power based on love is 1,000 times more effective and permanent than the one derived from fear and punishment." These are the names that come to mind when we think of the great men of peace. Do we no longer listen to them because they are no longer here? Is their message lost? Do you really believe them? Or are their words nothing more to you than empty platitudes you regurgitate to fool others into thinking you believe in peace? It's not easy to promote peace. It's easier to lash out. It's easier to shout back. It's easier to intimidate. It's easier to hate. I know. Looking inside, I know all too well. It's also easier to fail at standing for peace. It is much easier to join the collective anger. It will become harder and harder to break out of this mad rush to destruction. Where are the voices who call for peace? Who plead with people to use love to overcome hate and peace to overcome violence? They're out there, but only a precious few are listening. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.